to Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio, streamed on Rouge Radio.
Wow.
Yes, wow would be the magic word. Tonight, we have Paul Woods on the show. If he can find his way to his telephone, we'll hear from him shortly. But the most important thing is that we'll be talking the history of the Canadian Football League. A possibility that maybe we'll learn something today, thanks to Paul Woods. As you know, we've had an interesting week. The Toronto Argonauts have a lot to be proud of. They have now the coach of the year in their stable. Rookie coach wins the Grey Cup. Rookie coach, Scott Milanovic. You have to be very happy with what he accomplished and what he did. It's really important that a team have good leadership. And along with the GM, Jim Barker, his hiring of course, Scott Milanovic, and the preparation and the team that he had in front of him and some of the tough decisions that he made during the year really did make his winning the coach of the year a really good thing. So congratulations to him. But let's start by meeting some of the other finalists. And thank you to CFL.ca so that we could play this wonderful stuff for you.
On December 1st, 2011, the Toronto Argonauts named Scott Milanovic as the 42nd head coach in team history. To say there was pressure on Milanovic in his first CFL head coaching job was an understatement. The Argonauts were hosting the historic 100th Grey Cup game. But right from the start, Milanovic made it clear the Grey Cup is the goal.
I subscribe to the John Wooden school of coaching. And what that means is, over the years, you will not hear me stand up here and talk about winning the Grey Cup. Everybody knows what the goal is. If you don't know what the goal is, you shouldn't be here.
Then, 11 days later, the Argonauts pulled off a blockbuster trade, acquiring Ricky Ray from Edmonton, giving the Double Blue the top-notch quarterback they've been longing for.
Ricky Ray's looking for the end zone, has a man, and he has a touchdown, Andre Jerry.
But for Milanovic, there was still a lot of work to do. He was taking over a new team with a new QB, learning in a new system. Milanovic also showed he was not afraid to make tough coaching decisions, releasing at the time the league's leading rusher in Corey Boyd, and naming Chad Kacker as the team's starting running back. But then came the biggest scare of all, when Ray was injured in Week 13 against Montreal. Luckily, the injury was not season-ending, and the Argos weathered the storm. Ray returned in Week 17, and the offense took off, scoring more than 30 points in their final three regular season games each. But it was in the playoffs, where it counts, when Milanovic would make history, becoming the first Toronto coach to take an Argonaut team that did not finish above 500 to the Grey Cup title.
Let me tell you something about the Grey Cup. All right, it is not that you're going to be physically tired. It's that you're going to be mentally fatigued because of all the things that happen. So when you're flipping through your playbook this week and you don't think you can turn another page, turn one more page. When you're watching film and you don't think you can watch another rep, watch one more rep. When the water's too deep, take one more stroke. You know, we've been throwing the mountain all year. There's just one more step to take.
And on home field in the 100th Grey Cup game, the Argonauts capped off the dream of dream seasons, defeating the Stampeders 35-22. Milanovic joined Adam Rita as the only Toronto rookie head coaches to win the Grey Cup since 1952. the longest tenured coach currently in the CFL. John Huffnagel completed his fifth season in charge of the Calgary sideline. Having never missed the playoffs under his tenure, Huffnagel was trying to get the Stampeders back to the Grey Cup for the first time since they won it all in 2008. But he knew he would need contributions from every one of his players if they were to have a shot at Lord Earl Grey's trophy.
But we have to understand something, man. I don't want to take the shine off of this win because it's a fantastic win, okay? But to get to go where we want to go, we cannot play football that way.
The Stampeders would have their share of adversity in 2012. After saying goodbye to Henry Burris, Huffnagel gave the keys to fourth-year pivot, Drew Tate. But then in week two,
Tate is troubled and dropped.
Huffnagel would now look to Kevin Glenn, acquired for Burris in the offseason as a veteran presence for Tate.
Now Glenn will take a shot. He's got Bryant. Touchdown!
And Glenn did not disappoint, leading the Stamps to a 12-6 record and yet another playoff berth. Huffnagel again had a tough decision heading into the Western semifinal against Saskatchewan. Would it be Tate or Glenn? He chose Drew Tate, and it paid off. But the win came with a price. Tate was out for the Western final, but Huffnagel continued to coach, inserting Glenn as the starter for that game against the CFL's best, BC Lions. And once again, there was a payoff, this time with a berth in the 100th Grey Cup.
That if we play with great courage and great effort, as you men do each and every game, you're a very hard team to beat. And that one word, team, is the reason why we're here tonight, man.
Even though the Stampeders lost that Grey Cup game to the hometown Argos, John Huffnagel could be proud of the fight Calgary showed in 2012. On December 13, 2011, the BC Lions named Mike Benavides the 24th head coach in team history. Benavides had big shoes to fill, taking over from coaching legend Wally Buono and also the defending Grey Cup champions. But the rookie head coach could not wait to get on the field.
The day is finally here. We get to take that first step in that brand new journey.
And under Benavides, the Lions did not miss a beat and continued their dominance of the CFL's West Division, leading the way with a league-best record of 13-5.
Andrew Harris, a walk to the end zone, touchdown!
Along the way, Benavides became the first coach in Lions history to have the league's top-ranked offense and defense in the same season. And his 13 victories set a new team record and tied the all-time CFL record for wins by a rookie head coach. Benavides made sure his players kept their foot on the gas all season long, reminding them that the prize this year is no different from last, and challenging them to get back to the exact same spot.
You impose your will on the opponent. This is our house. You hear me? This is our house. At the end of the day, what are we here to do?
Win.
Let's go!
The Lions headed into the playoffs right where they wanted to be, hosting the Western Final against Calgary. However, it would be the Stamps who would prevail, 34-29, in a shootout in what some would say was a major upset. The Lions fell short in advancing to back-to-back Grey Cups. But with Benavides at the helm, expect BC to continue knocking on the championship door. On December 1st, 2011, the Toronto Argonauts named Scott Milanovich as the 42nd head coach in team history. To say there was pressure on Milanovich in his first CFL head coaching job was an understatement. The Argonauts were hosting the historic 100th Grey Cup game. But right from the start, Milanovich made it clear the Grey Cup is the goal.
I subscribe to the John Wooden school of coaching. And what that means is, over the years, you will not hear me stand up here and talk about winning the Grey Cup. Everybody knows what the goal is. If you don't know what the goal is, you shouldn't be here.
Then, 11 days later, the Argonauts pulled off a blockbuster trade, acquiring Ricky Ray from Edmonton, giving the Double Blue the top-notch quarterback they'd been longing for.
Ricky Ray's looking for the end zone, has a man, and he has a touchdown, Andre Jerry.
But But for Milanovic, there was still a lot of work to do. He was taking over a new team with a new QB, learning in a new system. Milanovic also showed he was not afraid to make tough coaching decisions, releasing at the time the league's leading rusher in Corey Boyd, and naming Chad Kacker as the team's starting running back. But then came the biggest scare of all, when Ray was injured in Week 13 against Montreal. Luckily, the injury was not season-ending, and the Argos weathered the storm. Ray returned in Week 17, and the offense took off, scoring more than 30 points in their final three regular season games each. But it was in the playoffs, where it counts, when Milanovic would make history, becoming the first Toronto coach to take an Argonaut team that did not finish above 500 to the Grey Cup title.
Let me tell you something about the Grey Cup. All right, it is not that you're going to be physically tired. It's that you're going to be mentally fatigued because of all the things that happen. So when you're flipping through your playbook this week and you don't think you can turn another page, turn one more page. When you're watching film and you don't think you can watch another rep, watch one more rep. When the water's too deep, take one more stroke. We've been climbing the mountain all year. There's just one more step to take.
And on home field in the 100th Grey Cup game, the Argonauts capped off the dream of dream seasons, defeating the Stampeders 35-22. Milanovic joined Adam Rita as the only Toronto rookie head coaches to win the Grey Cup since 1952.
Now, how happy are you? We'll play the end of the story a little later on. Thanks again to the CFL.ca for providing that audio. You all recognize that young man. Yes, he's from, what is he, TSN? Is it TSN he's from? Yeah, I think that's where he's from. Now, joining us is another young man. His name is Paul Woods. He's a historian, and he's just begun and hoping to complete a book about the Argos, 81 to 83. And for those of you that listen to this program, we had Dan Ferrone on, and Dan Ferrone was central to that team. And you heard him discuss the disappointment that the team went through in those first 2 years, 81 and 80, well, 81 actually, 81 and maybe a little bit 82, I guess, because they won in 83. So it was kind of a disappointing time. Dan, by his own definition, said that probably the worst Argo team of all time. And that's 140 years, Dan. Boy, you're setting the bar really low, let me tell you. So joining us now, Paul Woods, historian and future author of the Argos, 81 to 83. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me.
I am so pleased to have you. You're in our wheelhouse. You're a toss right into the numbers. You're what I've been looking for, and it's going to be really nice if you can join us every so often or a regular, however you decide, because I think the most important thing about the CFL, more than anything, is the history. It's long and illustrious history. And you must have a mountain of information about that history.
I have quite a bit, that's true. I guess I've got it in different formats, books, newspapers, videos, radio stuff, yeah, all that stuff. Lots of stuff to go through, sometimes too much to deal with.
Can we make this CFL 101 at this point?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. So here it is, 140 years later. Let's roll back. Can I ask you about the – and I want the people at home to understand this, those of you that are listening to this either live or on a recording or a download, whatever. We haven't rehearsed this conversation, so I'm really relying on this young man to have a wealth of information. So if I ask a question that's too difficult, I apologize in advance, Paul.
Okay, because
I know you weren't there 140 years ago, but heck, I'm going to ask anyway. What started all this? Let's say for the Argos 140 years ago, and some hundred and change for the CFL.
Oh boy, you start with a doozy. I don't know that I can really answer that one. My area of interest in the history of Canadian football is mostly more recent than that, to be honest. I think it's really cool that the Argos have been around as long as they have, and you know, are apparently the oldest professional sports franchise in North America, although of course they weren't operating really as a professional sports franchise 140 years ago. But to be honest with you, I haven't really spent a lot of time exploring the Argonauts in that era. My interest has primarily been sort of what I would call the modern era of Canadian football, sort of from basically 1950 to today. To talk about the 140 years ago, I'm afraid that's maybe a conversation for another day if I do a little bit of research.
Well, let's express it this way. Maybe it's my fault for not asking the question in the right way. I guess what I'm trying to say is that 140 years ago, there was a rowing club. We all know that.
Yep.
And that is the root of the Toronto Argonauts. That's why you have the oars. That's why you have the boatmen. That is what it was. The history, a little bit, I'm going off the top of my head now. You know, where the trophies were held at the Toronto Argonaut Rowing Club, that building burned down. So a lot of the history was lost because of the fire at that Argonaut Rowing Club. But I think the important issue that I wanted to raise is that football for the Toronto Argonauts was hardly football at the time. That's the point I guess I was hoping to get out from you, and I should have asked the question a little better. But the point is that they were at the inception of football. And when we say that the Argonauts go back 140 years, we're talking about going before the NFL. The NFL didn't exist, you know. It was a gleam in somebody's eye. And the history of football in Canada is deep and long, and the roots run very, very deep. Now, we'll go ahead, and you know what? That means now you have to come back, because now you have to do research on the early, early, early Argos and the early, early, early CFL. So let's go to your strong point. Where's the line where you start when you talk about the 50s, 60s? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yes. I became a fan in the late 60s, and I became what I would call a serious fan in very early 1977. I've been following the team incredibly closely since then. So that's, you know, what, 36 years. And I've spent a fair bit of time kind of piecing together the stories of the 50s and 60s and the early part of the 70s when I wasn't paying as much attention. I mean, I started watching the Argos and following them and being a fan, I guess it's probably fair to say, in 68. I was, you know, more or less aware of what they were doing and what was happening with the team from that point on. Although, really, my involvement with them and my enthusiasm for them became much, much stronger starting in 1977. And so what I've sort of learned about, you know, 50s and 60s and some of the earlier pre-77 years in the 70s is from reading things, you know, from picking up, you know, great books and other things that have been written over the years by journalists and so on. Certainly from 77 onward, I feel like I have been following it intensely closely most of that time. Have been sort of cataloging and documenting in some ways, in my own sort of bizarre collectible ways, you know, what's been going on with the team over that 36-year period.
All right, so now what we're talking about then is you're talking about back to Leo Cahill. Name a few people, the eras that you're talking about.
Well, certainly when I became a fan, it was, as I said, I think it was 68, that was Leo as the head coach and lots of really cool players. I mean, to me, the Argos were the first adults I ever saw who were cool, They had some guys with long hair. You know, my dad didn't have long hair. Most adults in the late 60s didn't have long hair. The Beatles had long hair, but they weren't considered adults to me. And the Argos, all of a sudden the Argos had guys with hair sticking out the back of their helmets. It looked really cool. Bobby Taylor was a particular favorite of mine, a receiver. Obviously Mel Prophet.
Yep, he was mine.
There were tons of great characters with that team. That was a team, you know, as anybody who saw the documentary last year that Christy Callan Jones did, they were a band of renegades, a band of guys who were extravagant and flamboyant and really kind of reflected the emergence of Toronto as a modern city after so many years as a pretty tight-assed city that didn't even have, you know, sporting events on Sunday and things like that. The Argos were suddenly this explosion of cool. And so, I just loved the uniform colors. I thought the double blue color scheme was a really neat looking thing. And my dad was an Argo fan, so that was really kind of my entry point. But I bonded with the team myself. And they say I followed it pretty closely for the remainder of Leo's era, his first era. And then I was in high school and I got into other stuff. I got into girls, I got into other stuff and didn't really follow closely for about, I guess, 3 or 4 years. And then I made a decision right at the end of the 1976 season for reasons that I can't recall. I decided I'm going to become a serious fan. I'm going to really, really pay close attention and try to sort of, you know, really keep it, you know, sort of document what's going on with the team. I mean, I was heading towards a career in journalism, and so I had a natural affinity for journalism. I was a, you know, a voracious newspaper reader, and I just decided I'm going to document this thing. So I initially started ripping stories out of the paper and keeping scrapbooks, and pretty quickly that, you know, after about a year or so, the burden of putting together the scrapbooks became way too big because there were just way too many clippings and it was just too much trouble to be gluing and all that stuff. And I had other things to do, like go to university. So I just started then, you know, sort of saving clippings in no particular organized fashion. And that was, of course, 77 was the year that Leo came back, Leo's second stint as head coach. And it was an exciting time to be an Argo fan. They were drawing huge crowds. The stadium, exhibition stadium, had been expanded so that it would accommodate a baseball team. And suddenly their capacity in there was about 54,000, and they were averaging sort of 49,000 fans a game. The Argos in the late 70s, really, you could probably say all the way from the late 60s through to the late 70s and right into the very beginning of the 80s, were virtually on a par with the Leafs in terms of the importance in Toronto's culture and in Toronto's sporting culture. They were massively bigger than the Blue Jays, who had just started, of course, in 77. And as I said, it was an exciting time to be an Argo fan. A big stadium, a big name coach in Leo Cahill, even though he didn't succeed in the second go round. They brought back Leon McQuay for a short time in 77. People don't remember that, but Leon McQuay, who of course was the hero in 71 and also the goat in the 71 Grey Cup game, or one of the two goats, I guess, was back for a bit in 77. And then in 78, Terry Metcalf came, who was the latest in the long line of big saviors from the NFL. And although Terry didn't have a tremendously successful time in his 3 years in Toronto, he was a very exciting player to be rooting for. And there were lots of number 21 jerseys around town and so on.
Oh, absolutely. And those were the days, as you mentioned, that the Toronto Argonauts were drawing. And what I learned from Dan Ferrone is that, And it's understandable. Around that time, the explosion of the NFL and NFL football on television began. But before that, before the NFL, the TV NFL became what it is today, the income of a team in sports was driven by the gate. And the Toronto Argonauts were making a lot of money. Is that not fair to say?
Probably. I don't know that if it's ever really been reported on exactly how well they were doing, because they were a privately owned team. I mean, they passed from the Bassetts to Bill Hodgson and then to Carling O'Keefe. And my assumption, and I think it's probably safe to say that most journalists' assumption, was that all of those guys made money owning the Argonauts. I mean, player salaries were quite low, other than the odd, you know, mass megastar that was signed to come up here, like Anthony Davis or Terry Metcalf. And they were drawing big box office. And even in 83, which was a bit later, when in an oddly bizarre twist, the team won the Grey Cup and their attendance started to go down. But from 83 to 85, I believe, was the largest contract that the CFL ever had with TV. Even then, though, the CFL's always been a gate-driven league. I mean, even back in 83 to 85, with the big dollars from Carling O'Keefe as the sponsor, the teams made the bulk of their revenue from gate, and they certainly do now. And I think it's fair to say that probably it would have been a profitable venture for Johnny F. Bassett and Bill Hodgson and Carling O'Keefe. But we don't really know because it wasn't a publicly traded company. It wasn't required to report on the stock exchange or anything like that. The numbers would have been buried within Carling O'Keefe's annual reports, and, you know, as big as the Argos were, they were probably an insignificant part of the Carling O'Keefe empire. And Bill Hodgson, I think, was just a wealthy guy who owned hotels and owned the Toronto Argonauts, and however the things went was sort of his business.
Oh, absolutely. But I think the only point that I think has to remain out there, and that is that the gate-driven side of sports was at that time really what drove sports. Television, for example, a little bit earlier, I don't want to say an add-on because it was important, but it was not that important. For those that may recall, the Grey Cup was split between the CBC and CTV back in that era, where, you know, it was a prized jewel. The Grey Cup was the prized jewel. It was in competition with anything that was out there. So in turn, that was due also to the popularity of the team here in Toronto, regardless of the fact that they weren't successful. I think that's the biggest thing historically, as far as the Toronto Argonauts are concerned, that I always am amazed at. How they had that Chicago Cub feel, you know, where the Argos, in fact, that thing that we all yell, you know, Argos. The reason that was there is because the Argos tended to lose a lot. And that was the Argo Bronx cheer, if you will. So, you know, I'm really happy that the Argos won the Grey Cup this year, because I, unlike you, spent a lot more time further away from the Argos, and this was a year when I came back full tilt, and it was a wonderful experience. Now, back in the 80s, the teams were, as you said, they were wonderful to watch. They had character. What other things can you tell us about those teams in that era?
Are you talking specifically for the era that in the book that I'm writing, or for
Let's talk about the book you're writing, 81 to 83. We understand from Dan Ferrone that the team, in his mind, by his own words, the team wasn't a very good one. It was actually a very disappointing team, and they did win the Grey Cup in 83. So there was they hit a real bottom before they got that real high of winning a Grey Cup after so many years of disappointment for the Argo fans.
Yeah, it's a fascinating era, and it's part of why I'm doing the book the way I'm doing it. I mean, I originally set out I was going to write a book about winning the Grey Cup in 1983 after 31 years of disappointment and failure, and that is ultimately where the book goes. But it became very quickly evident to me that it's a three-year story arc. I mean, the 81, the way I've been describing it, 81 was the worst season in team history. It really was. I mean, the only time in history, at least certainly in anything resembling a modern era, and it probably would go back far before the beginning of what I call the modern era in 1950, the only time the Argonauts won only two games all season long. So the worst season in team history, followed in 82 by what I consider the most exciting season in team history. And that's obviously a subjective judgment that I've arrived at that some others may disagree with. But to me, it was incredibly exciting the way that the team suddenly emerged after so many years of being awful to being not only a winning team that got to the Grey Cup, but an incredibly exciting team with big stars and a big offense and doing things that hadn't been done before in Canadian football. And then the third year, of course, being 83, when the Argos were dominant on the field and then ended up winning the Grey Cup and winning both the Eastern Final and the Grey Cup in extraordinarily exciting fashion, coming from behind very late in both those games to win and to finally break the 31-year drought. So tremendously exciting time. In many ways, to be honest, the stories from 1981 and 1982 are more interesting than the stories from 83. 83, you know, the story of the Eastern Final and the story of the Grey Cup are both fascinating stories, and I'll be going into great detail about those in the book. And there's some other interesting things that happened in 83 as well, but 81 and 82, Frank, were just chock-a-block full of incredibly interesting and intriguing storylines, from, you know, the whole Willie Wood saga in 81, some of the bizarre events that happened under his watch, the emergence of Ralph Fazio as the team president after five games in 81, various things that happened off the field with players, and various weird events that happened on the field with players. And then 82, of course, a new head coach comes in with a new assistant coach, Mouse Davis, who brings in an offense, the run and shoot, that had never been, nothing like it had ever been seen before in Canada or really anywhere in professional football. And incredibly, some of the things the Argos were doing in 82 by themselves are now being done by teams on both sides of the border regularly, various offensive formations and plays and things like of that nature. So all kinds of things happened in 82. The death in mid-season of the longtime equipment manager, and a game that was broadcast on NBC that happened to be the worst game the Argos played all season. I could go on and on about the things that happened in 81 and 82, and I'm sure over time we'll get a chance to talk about some of those things.
Well, you know, it's great that you mentioned this, because the forward-thinking Argos of that time, and they were very forward-thinking, because if I'm not mistaken, now you're scratching my memory now, Woods was the first Afro-American coach in professional football.
Yeah, Willie Wood was the first African-American, first black head coach in pro football. He started coaching with the Philadelphia Bell of the World Football League, which was a league that sprung up in the mid-70s for a few years. Of course, the people from Toronto who with long memories may remember that there was supposed to be a Toronto team in that
mm-hmm.
league. The Toronto Northmen
and
the federal government actually legislated them out from, you know, basically forced them down into Memphis to become the Memphis Southmen, and Leo Cahill went down and led that operation. But they had a team in Philadelphia called the Bell, and Willie Wood went from an assistant coach with the San Diego Chargers to head coach of the Philadelphia Bell, and then was out of football for a couple of seasons. He was hired on in 1979 by Forrest Gregg, who was brought in as the head coach of the Argonauts. And Forrest had been a member of the Green Bay Packers in the 60s during the Green Bay dynasty. Willie Wood had also been a member of that team.
Correct.
And Forrest hired Willie as his secondary coach. And then Forrest left after 1 year to go and coach the Cincinnati Bengals, kind of a remarkable story in itself, given that the Argos were 5-11 in his 1 year as head coach, and yet an NFL team decided to steal him away from them. And then one day after he left, Lou Hayman, who was the president of the Argos at the time, asked Willie Wood to take over as the head coach. And so he became the first black coach in the Canadian Football League, as well as having been the first in pro football with the World League. And by the way, I should clarify, first black coach in pro football since the 1920s. There was a black coach named Fritz Pollard back in the 1920s in the United States. But in the modern era of football, Willie was the first African-American to be a head coach. And I really liked Willie. He was an extraordinarily likable coach from a fan standpoint. He coached the team to a 6-10 record in 1980, and I came out of that season feeling incredibly optimistic about the future. And then he made some incredible moves in 81 to bring in Condridge Holloway and Cedric Minter, and to start replenishing the Canadian talent on the Argonauts. And it was amazing to me that he then went 0-10 and got fired, because that team probably should have been and arguably could have been in the Grey Cup that year had a few things gone a different way. The East, you know, was not a strong division. The team that made the Grey Cup from the East had 5 wins in the regular season, that being the Ottawa Rough Riders.
Mm-hmm.
The Argonauts could very well, had they managed to squeak into the playoffs, they might very well have ended up doing some damage there based on the talent that they had. But one thing after another went wrong. The story of the beginning of the 81 season is just immensely fascinating. Game after game, the bizarre occurrences that happened. And after 10 losses in a row, Willie was fired. And then even at 0-10, the Argos still had a shot at the playoffs. And even at 2-13 going into the last game of the season, they had a shot at the playoffs had they been able to manage a win against Hamilton in the final game of the season. But as was usually the case back then, the Tiger Cats put them out of their misery on the final day.
Yes. We're going to take a short break. We'll leave it there for now. And we'll conclude the story about the Coach of the Year. We'll be back after this short break.
Coach Hoffnagel did. Congratulations, Coach. How does this feel?
Feels good. It's something that I share with our organization, our coaching staff, and our players. But it was a great year for us. It was a magical year that ended on a nice note.
You mentioned your players. How much of an impact did they have in your role as a coach and getting you to this point right now?
Well, they had every. I mean, it's a player's game, and we always tell them that they're the ones that sell the tickets. They're the one that people want to watch. They don't want to hear me talk, and they're the ones that make this happen. The assistant coaches are behind the scene, and they're organizing the whole thing and getting them in the positions to be successful. But this game's all about the players.
What do you think separated you from the other two finalists?
I think either one of them were more than deserving. What Coach Hoffnagel did, with Kevin Glenn for majority of the season, I thought was amazing. Mike Benavides having to follow in Wally's shoes, that's as tough as it gets, and he did it with class, and they were a dominant team all year, so I think this could have gone to anybody.
100th Wycombe champs, you got a new contract. What's next for Scott Milanovic and the Toronto Argonauts?
Now we're just going to get back to work and try to get our guys ready for that first game.
What are some of the challenges you faced heading into 2013?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be change in your roster. We've lost some guys. We've picked some guys up, and just finding that mold that we found last year and where guys fit and what's the best way to utilize them. It always takes time.
Is there any pressure for you to repeat?
For me, there's always pressure to win the Grey Cup. That's our goal, and I don't worry about the fact that it's a repeat. I mean, it's another year, another chance to win a Grey Cup. So we focus on the day-to-day jobs that it takes to get there in November. So we'll worry about that when the time comes.
Thank you, Coach.
Thanks a lot.
Do you want to be heard, disagreed with, or just plain shot down? Come on! Be brave! Call the Candid Frank Live Show, a.k.a. the CFL Show. You already hit the link to bring up the player, and you hit the play button so you can hear us. Now hit that little Skype button on that Candid Live player sitting there, like your pet wanting a snack. So to connect with us and tell us your thoughts, hit that little tiny, cute, and tempting Skype button. Right? Now, do it! Or call 714-242-5250. That's 714-242-5250. If you have any questions for our guest, Paul Woods, historian extraordinaire, 81-83 Argonauts, the lowest of the low point for the Toronto Argonauts, the highest of the high points after 31 years, as described by Paul Woods. A wonderful moment in Argonaut history, if you will, and that I remember back then, I'm old enough to remember, and that Argo chant was the chant that people yelled at the end of the game when the Argos were losing. It was part of the ritual that people went through, the 40-plus thousand people that would go to an Argo game against hope that the team would win, but in reality, up until 1983, losing was what the Argos did. But I got to tell you, and I want to say this, and I am really saying this with all seriousness, the Argos lost in style. And when I say that, I'm not trying to say anything other than the game was great. The Argos played. They just really were a snake bit team. For those of you that are old enough, you know how many bad breaks the Argos had to overcome to finally win in 83. All you have to do is say two words, Leo Cahill. I mean, it is what it is. Paul, a team that was snake bit for 31 years, and then 83 happens, and will take us up to 83 and finally winning the Grey Cup.
Well, it's a long and fascinating journey for them. I mean, your point about the fans and how they handled those games is absolutely true and interesting. I think, Frank, I used to feel when I was going to the games back in, I started going regularly to Argo games in 1980. I went a few times in the late 70s, and then started going regularly in 1980. And I felt as if there was a kind of a mindset in the fan base that almost kind of enjoyed the entertainment of the way the losses would happen. I kind of felt at times that there were 49,000 people there, and everybody except me was there, you know, with one purpose in mind, and that was to boo Zenon Andrusicin and make him miss his field goals. And you know, I was thinking, man, he's our field goal kicker. Come on, we got to cheer for him, right? But so getting into 82, I mean, after the horrors of 81, they actually. Oh, let me just give you a little story, actually, because the last game of the 81 season. As I said earlier, it was a game in Toronto against Hamilton, and the Argos were sitting on 2 wins and 13 losses. But if they'd won that game, because of the tiebreaker, they would have gotten into the playoffs ahead of the Montreal Alouettes, who had finished the season at 3-13. And after the game, Hamilton wins. Toronto's missed the playoffs. They finished 2-14. And I was on the streetcar heading back home, going up Bathurst Street. And I had a little transistor radio with me and on the streetcar, this crowded streetcar, and I'm listening with my earpiece, and one of the radio stations comes on, I think it was CFTR, and doing their sportscast at probably 5 o'clock or something. And the sportscaster says, you know, so the Argos finished 2-14, and what's really bad about all this is that they have nothing to build on for next year. And I'm thinking to myself, that's ridiculous. I mean, we've got Condridge Holloway, Cedric Minter, Terry Greer, Paul Pearson, Jan Carinci, Dan Ferroni, a whole pile of guys that looked to me like they had talent. And I thought, like, how can you say there's nothing here? Because there is stuff here. And, you know, and I'm not saying this to say I told you so, but the fact is, the following year, they got good. And it was that same base of players, mostly, that Willie Wood had brought in 80 and 81, who were there in 82 and 83 when they suddenly got good and exciting, and then in 83 when they won the Grey Cup. And so Bob Obilovich comes in as the head coach in 82, brings in Mouse Davis to run the offense and brings in the run and shoot. And suddenly, Condridge Holloway, who in 81, I think Ralph Sazio was just about ready to run out of town, even though he'd only been there for 1 year, suddenly in 82, Condridge Holloway emerges as the most outstanding player in the CFL. Terry Greer becomes an all-world receiver, a guy who'd been hurt for most of the 81 season. Cedric Minter, who'd been a strong rookie in 81 as a running back, suddenly emerges as a very unique threat as a receiver out of the backfield.
Who does that sound like? Yeah, I'm going to tell you. Absolutely. Cedric
yeah.
Minter... Cedric Minter was the original Cacker, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's the thing. The other thing, and I don't want, because we're running out of time now, we're down to 16 minutes and change, and I want to make sure that the people out there understand one very important issue about the Toronto Argonauts. We talked about an African-American coach, which was unusual for that era. We talk about the fact that they had Forrest Gregg here. We talk about the Toronto Northmen. Remember, they had Zonka, Kick, and Warfield. That's who the Canadian government rejected. They came here, they sold the team, it was going to happen, and it never did happen. And I think the most important thing is Mouse Davis. You know, we talked a little bit about him and the offense that he brought here, that Western U.S. College, I think it was, he was from the Western U.S. colleges, right? And he had that offense that people were looking at kind of weird. Like they're saying, well, how can you do that? You know, but it worked great here because of that wide field, I guess. What was the reason, do you think, for Mouse Davis's success here?
Well, a few things, Frank. It's a good question. I mean, the run and shoot. I never had the pleasure of seeing the run and shoot when he operated at Portland State in the U.S. But he had some unbelievable success. In fact, Calvin Prinster, who played offensive tackle for the Argos in '83, is one of the guys I've interviewed for the book. And of course, he only got to the Argos in '83, so he was Mouse Davis was gone by the time Calvin arrived. But he played college at Cal Poly in Pomona, California, and he'd played against Portland State, and he told me that his team lost to Mouse Davis's Portland State team something like 73-7, and he said the week before Mouse Davis's team had beaten somebody 105-0. So obviously he had a particular skill set and knowledge base about how to run an offense very successfully in U.S. college football. What he found when he got to Canada was that we now got a 12th man, we've got a wider field, and we've got unlimited motion towards the line of scrimmage. And so Mouse was basically a kid in a candy store. It's like, wow, the things I can do up here. And interestingly, it took a while. It wasn't until the fifth game of the '82 season that the Argonauts offense really started to click. They did not get off to a strong start that season. They won two games, lost one, and tied one of the first four. But in none of those games did the offense really look like what it became afterwards. And the fifth game of that season, the 82 season, a home game against the Edmonton Eskimos was the definitive turning point in the fortunes of the franchise. What happened was Edmonton was coming to town. They'd already beaten the Argonauts pretty badly in week two. And they'd knocked Joe Barnes actually out of the lineup for several weeks. Joe Barnes, people forget, Joe Barnes was the starting quarterback at the beginning of the '82 season. He emerged out of camp as the starter, and Connors Holloway was on the bench. And in the second game of the season against Edmonton, out in Edmonton, Barnes suffered a lacerated buttock that was a terrible injury. He told me that he was bleeding like crazy. He had a gigantic. Puff on it on his buttock, and he was in hospital for days and days and days dealing with this. So he's out of the lineup, and Connors Holloway takes over as the starter, and the offense keeps struggling for another couple of weeks. And again, just to put it into a little bit of a historical context, back in '78 and in '79, and I think to some extent in 1980. The Argos got off to pretty decent starts in those seasons, and they would be maybe sitting there at 3-1 or 4-2, and it would be in August, it would be mid-August, and Edmonton Eskimos would come to town, and of course the Edmonton Eskimos were at that time in the middle of, well, they were getting towards the end of what would have been a 5 Grey Cups in a row run, and so Edmonton would come into town in August, beat the Argos, and basically ignite a long losing streak by Toronto. So here we were. We're 2-1-1. Here comes Edmonton. It's early August. Is it the same old, same old? And that night, the Argonauts were on another level. The offense. I had never in my entire life as an Argo fan, which at that point was only about 15 years worth of watching, I had never seen an Argonauts offense perform like the offense performed that night. Connors Holloway and Terry Greer were on a different planet. Dan Ferroni said to me that it was like you could see the ray going between Condridge's helmet and Terry Greer's helmet, and they, you know, they bombed the Eskimos to death, and it was so exciting, particularly the last touchdown. The Eskimos had brought the game to within 2 points in the second half, coming back, and we're all sitting there kind of holding our breath, thinking, here we go again. The Eskimos are going to somehow win this game, and we're going to go on another 8-game losing streak. Instead, Condridge Holloway gets the ball at about his 20-yard line. 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. He gets them up to midfield through some completions, and then he finds Terry Greer for the most gorgeous pass I ever saw in my life, a long bomb. Terry Greer is about three strides behind Joe Holloman, goes in for the touchdown, puts the Argos up by 9 points. The place goes bonkers, and the fans were so excited after the game that literally thousands of them stormed onto the field. There were players, you know, people were trying to steal the helmets off players. it was just like the whole stadium erupted with like joy that, man, we actually not only beat the Eskimos, the best team in the league, we dominated them. We have a fantastic team. And I've when I do all the interviews I'm doing for this book, I talk to players about this, and virtually to a man, everybody that was there in 82 says, yep, that was the turning point. That was the game when we knew we were for real. That was the game when we, after which we never believed we were ever going to be out of any game. And that's really what happened. They rode that momentum for the rest of that season. They got to the Grey Cup. They had went up against Edmonton again, also still in Toronto. And this time they ran up against a team that was on the end of a five Grey Cups in a row, a very strong veteran team that knew how to win. And the Argos were a new team that most of the guys had not been in the Grey Cup before, and they were just happy to be there, basically. And so they weren't able to win, and the weather conditions in the 82 Grey Cup were a factor. But really it was the final stages of an enormous powerhouse beating an upstart team that wasn't quite ready to win yet. And then 83, the Argos got to the Grey Cup, and by then, they having been through the defeat, they knew what it took, and BC Lions were the upstart who were just happy to be there and playing at home, and the Argos were all business, and they came out, and although they didn't play great in the first half, they shut the Lions down completely in the second half and chipped away and finally scored the winning touchdown with 3 minutes to go and gave us all joy after, well, I wasn't through there alive for the full 31 years, but I'd never seen the Argonauts win the championship, and I'll never forget a guy sitting in front of me up in BC Place, an older guy who had probably been alive through all of those years and probably many more, and he was just sort of sobbing, just saying, they won. They won. He couldn't believe it.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to conclude our interview with Paul Woods, historian and Argo advocate.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
As promised, it was a short break. I enjoyed it. How about you? And now our friend, our new friend, Paul Woods, has had a chance to take a breath. Now here we are. We're down to the last 7 minutes of the program, 7 minutes and change. Paul, what have we missed so far that you'd like to add to the story of the Canadian Football League?
Oh, there's a big question.
Hey, you don't have to say it all right now because I'm looking for an excuse to call you back. You understand that, right?
Yeah, I do. let me narrow it down for now anyway, and maybe
make it a preface for next time.
Well, that sounds like a good possibility, but we'll leave the viewers the listeners wondering about that. I think what I would want to say is as I said, the stories that I'm getting, as I research this book, I'm obviously going through old clippings and I'm watching old games on video and I'm listening to old radio broadcasts and all that stuff, but I'm also talking to a lot of the guys that were around the team, players, coaches, equipment people, trainers, journalists who covered them. I'm running a real spectrum of people that were there to try to hear their stories and collect their stories. And I'm hearing so many fascinating stories. And there's some common themes. I'm learning a lot about the leadership of the team. I'm learning a lot about the camaraderie of the team. Things that I kind of always thought might be true, but never really knew. And now that I'm sort of getting in behind the closed doors and hearing about it, I'm hearing just how tight a unit that team was. And how they rallied around their leaders, particularly around Condridge Holloway. And I'm hearing a lot of really funny little stories about events that happened, like the night the buses didn't show up to get them to Iverwind Stadium and things like that. So I think if as I go through the next few months, as I keep writing this book, I think you said off the top that I've started on it. I've made a good start on it, but it's not completed yet. And I want to get it out in time for around the start of the season, or certainly by no later than about midsummer. And I'm still doing some more interviews, but I'm mostly through that process now and into the final stages of the writing. What I'm also doing is I've built up a website, or it's really a blog, but it's sort of in web format, obviously, that is designed to kind of take people who are interested in the project on the journey with me as I go through these final few months of writing it. I'm putting up there, you know, highlights of, you know, little clips showing a touchdown that Terry Greer scored, or showing something that happened in a particular game, and audio clips from some of the broadcasts back then, and I'll be putting some writing up there, of course, and I'm finding other interesting photographs and things that will invoke some nostalgia among fans who were there at the time. You know, the old Argo car, the golf cart that in the shape of an Argo helmet, and you know, covers of some of the programs and things like that. Just to I want to have this the blog be kind of a teaser for what the book will be, and the book obviously is going to be primarily stories and writing, although there will be some photographs there. I can't put things like video clips into the book, obviously, and so this is a chance to sort of, you know, round out the picture. And I would encourage anybody that's interested in the project and interested in that time frame to, obviously, I'd like them to buy the book when it comes out, but I'd encourage them to go and check out the blog. It's the book is called Bouncing Back, From National Joke to Grey Cup Champs, and the blog is called bouncingbackbook.ca. That's the web address for it, and anybody who goes there will see an ongoing stream of stuff relating to the 81, 82, 83 Argonauts, and a whole range of interesting and in some cases, I think, pretty cool stuff. I've picked up some pretty interesting old games that I've been breaking down to sort of show little plays here and there. And for fans that were around at the time, I think they're going to find it a real nostalgia fest. Frank, I think that people that were alive at the time and were Argo fans, you know, we've had some fantastic teams since then. We had Doug Flutie here. We had the Rocket. We had Pinball Clemens. We had Damon Allen. We had the last year's wonderful team, the 2012 team, and hopefully they're going to repeat here in 2013. We've had a lot of great joy as Argo fans since 1983. But for people of my age and older, I think the 83 team has a particular resonance. People are particularly fond of that team, partly because we hadn't won in 31 years and they suddenly did win, partly because of the style of the team, the run-and-shoot offense, partly because of some of the pizzazz of some of the players, Condridge Holloway and Terry Greer, and the professionalism, but also the kind of the fun spirit that they had. There's a lot of reasons. Even you know, the boat logo on the helmets. People have looked back at that with a lot of affection. So I think people that are fans of that time are going to really enjoy the book, and hopefully they'll enjoy the project in the months leading up to the book as I keep putting stuff on the web and so on.
Well, listen, here's the promise I make to you before you say no to being on the show on a regular basis. We will not have to do an hour each time. We've had the good fortune of going through free agency and other things. We're now in the middle of the part of the season where I guess we'll call it the dog days of the season. But can I share with you my brilliance? Are you willing to sit in the glare of my brilliance?
Who wouldn't be?
There you go. And here's my brilliance. You said something about, you know, you wish you could include the video and audio evidence of that time in your book. Well, you know, bear in mind, and this is, and I'm not being, and I wasn't being sarcastic, I was being serious. I'm predicting the future at this point. With the advent of books online, books that are not paper, but there's a little computer that you hold in your hand that I bought my wife, which she adores, by the way, where you can read a book. There will come a time when people figure out that you can actually insert audio and video files in that book. And I see that as our future. In the books that you and author can also include. And I would be looking into that, and then I want 10% of your take.
Well, I don't know if I can agree to the 10%, because I've thought of that myself already, actually. I had that same thought. And in fact, I originally my plan really was to try to create some sort of like an iPad app for this.
Absolutely.
that would allow you to read about the touchdown and then click here and see the touchdown.
Absolutely.
Now the trouble, of course, is that there is all kinds of rights holder issues and so on, and it would involve a hell of a lot of lawyers and a hell of a lot of negotiations to get permission to do some of this stuff for profit. As it stands, I mean, I'm putting some clips up on YouTube that I to be very blunt and honest, I don't own the rights to them. I put a disclaimer in each of those clips that says, you know, this is not intended to be a copyright violation. If you are the copyright holder and wish this removed, let me know and I'll remove it. I'm trying to sort of, you know, allow people to get some enjoyment from short snippets from back then that I don't, to be honest, have the right to do. But that's YouTube. I mean, YouTube is all full of all kinds of stuff. And if anybody who does own those rights comes to me and says, take them down, I will, of course, take them down. But to actually put them into a for-profit venture like a book, you can't do that without having legal rights. And I don't have the resources at this point to be pursuing it. But nonetheless, I hope over the coming few months, as I build the blog and work toward getting the book done, I can provide a few brief moments of pleasure for people as they go back and look at some of this stuff and also see some of the things I'm going to be writing in the book and you know, other things that I will work in there that kind of relate to the book. I mean, when Dan Ferroni made the Hall of Fame last week, I guess it was, obviously I put a link up there because Dan was a huge part of that team that won in 83, and he was also a huge part of that team that lost in 81. And so I, you know, to me that's an important milestone in the history of that team. And of course I then said, and when is Hank Aliso getting in there? Because Hank's another guy that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame and isn't there yet. So, you know, that kind of stuff will be going on.
All right, listen, we've run out of time. We're running into Belton Johnson's time, but that doesn't matter. The important thing is Belton is a very patient man. I know that already about him. And I also know that I'm really grateful for the opportunity to listen to your take on the history of the Toronto Argonauts and Canadian Football League in general. And what I want to say is this, is that while I don't expect you to promise that you will be back regularly, I do hope that you will promise that you will be back.
Oh, yeah, I'll be back for sure. I will. You and I will talk offline about sort of how frequently we can do it and so on. But I enjoyed it a lot, Frank, and I'm happy to come back on for sure in the coming weeks. Just a case of figuring out when and where
Paul, where did the hour go? You're borrowing some of Belton's time.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Belton, if you're listening on the
he
phone.
Is
I'm
listening.
Sorry. Belton's a big, strong man, and I don't want to get him mad at me. But I hope you have a great conversation with him.
We will have a great conversation. The biggest reason why you and I are CFL fans is the character of the players that have played the game. You referred to Mel Prophet as being, an avant-garde kind of guy, as well as some of the other players of that era. We do know that we love our Argos, and every other team that's in the CFL has their dedicated following. And this is why I wanted to do this show, and this is what was the gleam in my eye about doing the show. And honest to goodness, Paul, you are a godsend because it is people like you that I'm hoping to meet when it comes to the Canadian Football League, because there are the people like you what give the young people an opportunity to understand that this isn't just something that started today. It's like my nephew when he came to my brother-in-law and he said, Dad, you won't believe this. You got to hear this group. And this is about 10 years ago. It's called Led Zeppelin. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
What is history is also present day. And it's interchangeable. We talk about it with clothing. It makes a comeback. Well, you know what? I'm hoping that not just because the Argos won the Grey Cup, because I, as big as an Argo fan as I am, I'm an even bigger Canadian Football League fan. And I love the rest of the teams in the league. They make me so proud to be Canadian. And I really enjoy their fervor, their excitement, and their dedication to each of their teams. And most of all, I'm so appreciative of your dedication to your team, the Toronto Argonauts, which basically is the root of being a fan. And you're doing what I think a fan on steroids should do.
You're not accusing me of being on steroids, I'm assuming.
No, but I'm accusing you of behaving like you are. No, I'm accusing you of being a real hyped-up fan, and I thank you. And it is so nice to meet someone who cares about a team that I care about and can share some news and information that I may not be aware of that I would like to be aware of. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Frank, and I enjoyed it. And the league needs fans like you. The league needs needs shows like this. I think it is a great sport. It's a great league, a great sport, and something that should be celebrated. And anything that celebrates it is a good thing. So keep up the good work for sure.
Thank you, sir. And Belton is one of the reasons why. I really like doing this show. Giving back is an important issue. Thank you, sir. I really enjoy the time with you. And we'll talk off air again, and we will get you back here ASAP.
Sounds good, Frank. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's take a short break, and let's see. What break should we take? Oh, here's one. This one's for you if you happen to be a Rider fan. And we'll be back with Belton. Got that Rider pride. You got that Rider pride. Is that Rider pride inside you? Hey, let me tell you something. I have me some Rider pride. And the reason I have Rider pride is the Grey Cup, the 100 and number one, the first of the next century is in Saskatchewan. Regina, Saskatchewan, to be specific. I'm waiting for Belton Johnson to give me a call, and he should be calling any second now. I promise he'll be calling. Now, Belton, let's talk about Belton. Who is this guy, Belton Johnson? Well, here's what I'm going to tell you about Belton Johnson. Belton Johnson is one of the typical CFL players, imports, that comes to Canada and decides, I like this place. I'm going to hang here. And you know what? I feel really welcome here, and I want to be a part of whatever's happening here in Canada. Not only will I be a part of what's happening in Canada, I am going to be on the leading edge of making sure that I give back. After 7 years in the Canadian Football League, of course, he played for Hamilton 1 year. He played for Winnipeg. He played for Saskatchewan as well, and I think he played for Edmonton as well. Let me check my stats here. Okay, he's from Coffeyville, Mississippi. And he's an offensive tackle, played for the Edmonton Eskimos. He also played for the Cincinnati Bengals, if you can imagine that. He played for the NFL as well. And, of course, Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And he is also the older brother of offensive lineman Marcus Johnson in the NFL. Now, let me see now. Here's, let's see. Oh, how about now, Belton? I'm on Facebook with Belton right now. Hey, Belton, let me give a try calling you. Did you put your number here so I can call you? Oh, I love live radio, live radio. Belton, if you want me to call you, you got to give me your number, man. Seriously. I mean, you know, call me now, Belton. Here, let me type it in. C-A-L-L-M-E-N-O-W. Please, always be polite. It's the one thing you learn in Radio 101. There, I've asked him to call. Now, hey, we'll take a short break, and here's what all of it's just a real short break.
I am Ryder Pride.
The flag bearers of our league.
The spirit of our game.
I will deafen all foes.
I will represent my team,
my province,
and my fellow fans
with honor and pride.
And inspire the next generation
of the Ryder Nation.
Green is my color.
Football is my game.
This is my pledge.
This is my pledge.
This is my pledge.
And that's part one. Let's do part two, because the part two part's what I really like. Well, hang on a second. Hang on a second. You know what? Instead of that, we'll give Belton a chance to give us a call and not put too much pressure on him. I want you to hear this song. This has become one of my favorite songs. It really has. I'm serious.
66,
89. There you go, man. Let's go out and paint the whole world green. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go out and paint the whole world green. Hello, young man. How you doing?
I'm all right. How about yourself?
What are you laughing for, buddy? What are you laughing for? We don't even know each other. You're already laughing at me.
That's some nice vocals you got there.
You're welcome, my friend. How you doing?
I'm all right. How about yourself, right?
I'm good, Belton. I'm just fine. Listen, I don't know Belton from Adam or Eve, for that matter. But I immediately was drawn to you because you're one of those guys that I admire in the Canadian Football League, and it doesn't matter what uniform you wore. And besides, you've worn more than one. The thing I enjoy the most about the Canadian Football League players and especially the American players, how many of you really become attached to the country of Canada to the point where you're willing to give back And tell us what you do right now. You were a player, played 7 years in the Canadian Football League. Now you find yourself in Ryderville, supporting supporting a team and a community. And tell us what you do in the community.
Well, I'm gonna say first, like I support all the CFL. You know, gave me an opportunity to come up play football, and I do love my Hamilton Tiger Cat fans big time. You know.
I got
for you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Surprise for you. And well, I got a surprise for you, and I'll give it to you. So you love your Hamilton Tiger Cat fans. Continue.
Oh yeah, and but you alluded to me, you know, living here in Ryderville. I fell in love with Saskatchewan. Fell in love with a girl here. We're happily married, and I do have a ton of Rider fans, and. I don't know, it's just something about Saskatchewan. It reminded me of Mississippi, minus the weather difference. But just the hospitality, you know. The
country folk.
Oh, yeah, I'm a country boy. Ain't no doubt about
and
that.
And our Saskatchewan brethren are country mm-hmm. folk. And, you know, they drive their combines to the football game. That's a rumor I hear.
Yeah, I've seen a couple BMWs around here, too. Now.
A few of those, too. Well, hey, let's get to the heart of the issue and why you're here. You're part of the Rider Alumni?
Yes, sir. The Rider Alumni Association, yes, sir.
And what does the Rider Alumni Association do in their community?
Well, you know, we kind of restructuring the whole thing right now. We got a new president, Terry Bullitt, who, you know, they kind of came at me, you know, because once I retired at the end of this past season, you know, they asked me if I would be able to join the, you know, Rider Alumni Association. And after talking to a couple guys like Matt Dominguez, Andrew Green, and, you know, I was like, yeah, let me try this out. And got in there, got to know the president, and next thing you know, we get to talking, and he has this vision of making, you know, the Rider Alumni Association the best alumni association in the CFL. And I saw that vision, and I felt the same way. And we started this perks program that, you know, I kind of go out, talk to different businesses, and, you know, and we got about 5 major events that's coming up, 2 golf tournaments, 1 in Regina, 1 in Saskatoon, a possibility of 2 casino nights, and a whiskey and wine festival that's going to be hosted during the Grey Cup week.
I'm looking forward to that one.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to it all.
So Belton, at the end of the day, uh-huh. What you're trying to do is what every sport tries to do, and that is make a connection between the business community and the football community.
Mm-hmm.
And how difficult is that?
I don't think it's difficult. Long as you go in there correct, and, you know, I feel like if you're yourself – it's easy. And then, I mean, the Rider name is so big around here in Saskatchewan that, you know, you said Rider. I went into this bakery, Sweet Ambrosia, and I got like 10 words out of that, which of those 10 were Saskatchewan Rough Rider Alumni Association, and they were ready to sign the papers on the dot and everything. And I had to actually pause them and tell them, you know, just – y'all read over it, take a couple, you know, days, and I'll get back to you.
Let me make my pitch, would you?
Yeah. So it's actually easy around here and stuff. And I, honest to God, I hope that the CFL, you know, the Alumni Association, I hope they see what we're doing out here, and because I think it could be done in every city in the CFL.
I know you're right, and I know you're right that they'll notice, and most of all, I know you're right that that they'll appreciate it when Grey Cup Week rolls around. Because one thing I do know about Grey Cup Week, having experienced it this past season, is that the fans notice everything. And also the media notices a lot. Because they, you know, the Saskatchewan media is going to gather like crazy. And then you're going to get all the media from the rest of the cities paying attention to what you're doing. But you know what? I can't think of a better place for the Grey Cup to be than Regina, Saskatchewan this season. And you're very
I can't wait. Oh, it's going to be a big party. I'm going to tell you that now. It's a lot of planning going on as we speak for the past, couple months. You know, a lot of business have been prepping, getting ready for it. And I hope it's Saskatchewan and the Ticats in it. I hope it's the Riders and Ticats in it.
Hey, slow down, buddy. Ease up. Hey, listen. I got to be honest with you now, Belton. Belton, I have to be honest with you now. Okay? Straight up, I'm an Argo fan. So I'm looking forward to playing Saskatchewan. I'm looking forward to the Argos playing Saskatchewan. And after you lose, I want to say that you guys played a great game. No, I mean, you know, I'm just saying. I'm not, like, you know, I'm not here to impress you with the fact that I'm an Argo fan. Woohoo! I'm here to tell you that it's a fait accompli. The Argos are coming to Saskatchewan, Regina, and they're coming home with a trophy.
That's a lot of big talk.
Hey, listen, it's big talk for a guy that can't walk the talk.
I don't
have to do with any of the heavy lifting, my friend.
I think Milanovic, he did do a heck of a job, you know, with that team. And kudos to the Argos organization and him. They had a heck of a year last year, and, you know, they won it. But this year, I'm telling you, it's, you know, just like how it was hosted in Toronto, you know, this past season, here in Saskatchewan.
You're going for three in a row. You're saying three in a row. Because BC won it in BC last year. Toronto won it in Toronto this year. And you're saying the Regina team in Saskatchewan, known as the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, are going to win it in Regina this coming year.
I am saying that.
Hey, you know what? If they do win it, you know the first thing I'm going to say?
What's that? You know what it is?
Congratulations, you deserved it. Because here's what I have to say about the Grey Cup and about Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan is one of the pillars of the Canadian Football League. Saskatchewan is one of the greatest cities in the world when it comes to sports. You know, they're up there with, and Belton, I think you'll understand when I say this, they're up there with the Green Bay Packers. They're a community-driven team.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying? You know, Toronto's a big city, and we're fortunate to have the Argos, but Regina is a city that, percentage-wise, loves their team far more than the Toronto City fans love their team. And there'll be a lot of Toronto fans squirming.
I agree.
But, Belton, you know what? All kidding aside, you know, I was kidding about the Argos and winning and all that. I'm looking forward to the adventure. I'm looking forward, Belton, for us to keep contact with each other until the Grey Cup, because I want someone, either you're going to do it for me or you're going to have to find somebody that I can speak to on a regular basis to talk about how the Grey Cup festivities are coming along.
Oh, I'm here 24/7, 7 days a week.
You know, you understand what I'm saying? Because I had the greatest opportunity in the world for me, personally.
Uh-huh.
I was a witness to the Grey Cup Festival. It was wonderful. The Toronto Argonauts did a marvelous job. You know, I just enjoyed the whole experience. And I'm hoping the best for Saskatchewan and Regina when it comes to the Grey Cup. I can't think of a better place to host it. And all kidding aside, I'm very proud of your community. Let's continue talking about what you do and Saskatchewan. And tell us from the inside, there have been, and if you don't mind, if I'm asking questions that you don't feel comfortable answering, that's okay too. But here you are in Saskatchewan. The Grey Cup is coming up in Saskatchewan. And the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are bringing in people like, my goodness, a receiver from BC that other teams would just love to have him. They went and took my friend, Tristan. You guys stole Tristan from us. My favorite Argo is now a Saskatchewan Rough Rider.
Well, hey, we need him. We're going to win it. So I like everything that the Riders have done so far. It's, on paper, but, you know, you got to go out there on the field and perform and, you know, get that chemistry going and stuff. But right now on paper, like, I think they're going to be the team to beat.
I can't argue with you for a second, Belton. You know, they've made a lot of moves. Their intention is clear. They don't only want to host the Grey Cup, they also want to win it. Tell us a little bit about the town, the city of Regina, and how it is, how widely accepted these moves are that they've been making.
Well, I mean, Regina's compared to Toronto, is, you know, it's a small blimp on the dot, but it's a wonderful city, a great city to raise a family, and I think that's why I like it so much. You know, I'm married, and my wife and I, we just had a baby boy, and it's a great place.
Well, folks, I don't know if it's just me or we lost Belton. How you doing there, Belton? You still around? Well, we appear to have lost Belton. Let's take a short break and see if we can reconnect. Here's, here we go, this one here. Let's try this one here for Belton. Let me know if you're there, Bill. No problem here.
We're really rolling. Now we're on our way. Our pride is showing. Yeah, it's growing every day. We've got that rider pride. A feeling deep inside. It's rider pride. Rider pride. We've got that rider pride. You know we just can't hide that rider pride.
Rider pride.
Got that rider pride. Feeling deep inside. It's rider pride. Rider pride. Oh, we've got that rider pride. You know we just can't hide that rider pride. Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's see if we, unfortunately, being the internet being what it is. Belton, are you there again?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, you just faded out. Don't worry about it. Thank you for calling back, by the way. Hey, listen, can I play one more thing for you? Because you mentioned to me that you were a Ticat fan, right?
Oh, yeah.
Are you ready? See if
I'm
this,
ready.
See if this rings any bells. You ready? Here we go.
There's an unwritten code in Hamilton. If you live by it, chances are you've replaced the last beer in a cooler. You don't talk during the national anthem. You believe that great things can come from a little room above a fruit stand. You know Mac is a university, not a computer. Your child's first words were Oski Wee Wee. You know a red hat looks good with black and gold, and understand that double blue only looks good on the police. You believe hot water isn't a necessity for the visitor's dressing room. You've hit every green light on Main Street twice. You believe there's a little general in all of us. You only wear your good hard hat to games. You know King Kong was more than an ape, he was a five-time All-Star. You've parked on somebody's lawn to catch a kickoff. You know that Porter is a quarterback, not a bellhop. You've worn a kilt to a football game. You understand that every once in a while you have to be the center. You believe a football team can outlast 22 prime ministers, two world wars, a Great Depression, and still give birth to a pearl. You've worn a garbage bag as a raincoat. You've never seen a fair catch. You pick a concession line not based on how long the line is, but how hot that cashier looks. You understand that Labor Day is more than an extra day off. And no matter what happens on the field, your season is a success if you beat the Argos.
That sound familiar?
Honestly, I've never heard that before.
You never heard, but I noticed that you enjoyed it, at least a couple of parts of it.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Hey, you know, I love the CFL. I love the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the fans, and I really do. I love the CFL, and I've always have. I just haven't paid close enough attention as maybe as I have this year and a couple of other years in my life. And that's why I'm grateful to people such as yourself, Belton, that put back.
Appreciate it.
And I really appreciate it. So let's talk about being a Hamilton Tiger Cat for a little bit, because in my community, being a Hamilton Tiger Cat fan means you're the enemy.
Oh, yeah.
I know you feel that. No,
and being a Tiger Cat player, to me it was, the Ticats are in the Eastern Division, and to me it was just like the Riders. I feel like the Ticats are the Riders of the East, to be honest with you. And I think if you talk to most Rider fans, I would think that their second favorite team is the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
You know what?
And
I wouldn't doubt it for a second.
It's that blue collar feel that, you go out, with your pail bucket and just go out, dig dirt and, because that's the thing they always compare with Toronto and Hamilton. Toronto was the city folk with the fancy cars, whereas the Ticats are, the hard working, get it done type of a, football team.
Hey, you know what? The Hamilton Tiger Cats are a lunch pail team, no doubt about it. But I got to tell you, I have to tell you that the CFL players as a whole are a lunch pail team. You guys love the game so much, it's not about the money. I mean, let's be honest. Belton, do you mind if I go down this road? Do you mind?
No, I'm not playing anymore. So let's go down the road.
Okay. No. It's not about the CFL for the players. Is not about making money. It's about in loving the game and loving the place you play. That's really what it's about, isn't it?
It really is, man. It's unless it really is. My brother, he played in the NFL. He was, fortunate to be a second round draft pick. And I mean, he made a ton of money. And I mean, you're talking nickels and dimes, when you talk, playing in the CFL compared to the NFL. And so, I feel like it's a true love of the game. To me, it's almost like playing college football. Because in college football, you definitely don't get paid. And in the CFL, you get paid, but it's definitely more for the love, I think.
Absolutely. And you know, the love of the game isn't hard. Belton, you know, you were on the line, okay? Mm-hmm. And I guess to you, the fact that the field is wider, does it make a difference to you?
Well, being that I'm 300-plus pounds, that wide field makes a huge difference when I had to come pulling and running an extra few yards. it is a difference. It is.
In what way, mostly, other than the fact that you got to move east-west?
I don't know. It's just bigger. Even, you know, when I trained in the off-season and stuff, like, I would always had to add a few yards, you know, when I'm running because I want to be in shape for the CFL field, not, you know, the standard, you know, American 100-yard field and stuff. So, like, it's a difference in, you know, with the quarterback throwing a ball and, you know, they had to use, you know, certain parts of the field, you know, to throw the ball and stuff because, again, it's not – the standard American feel.
Now, let me ask you another question. Now, here you come to Canada, right? You're a player. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. I mean, football players, come on. Let's be honest. You got your pick of the women you know what I'm saying? And now you meet a woman here. Now you meet a lady here in Canada. You meet her in Canada, uh-huh. and you say to yourself, you know, I really like this lady. I think I'm going to spend the rest of my life with her. What is that like when you consider Belton, between you and I, man to man here, okay? You didn't come here looking for a wife. You didn't come here looking for a wife.
That's true.
Am I right?
I did. You're right. I did. It's just, I don't know. I guess you get older, you get wiser, and, you know, again, football – you know, I've always understood NFL stand for not for long. And, you know, to me, that's what football is, not for long. So, and if you're fortunate enough, like I've played 10 years total, you know, and once you start creeping up that ladder, you know, things change, you know, and mindset change. And you meet a girl who, I mean, for me, you know, I'm from Mississippi. I love to eat, and my wife, she definitely can cook. So, what's the saying? The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So, she got me there. So, and we just had a lot of things in common, and you know, we both love traveling. We've gone to Europe. We've been to Spain, Italy, and we head to Hawaii this weekend. And that's one thing we love to do is travel, man. And once she hit those, you know, those key spots for me, traveling and food, it was a wrap.
Well, weighing 300 pounds, you didn't have to sell me on the idea that you liked food.
Yeah.
You know, Belton, we don't know each other from Adam, but I love you already, I got to tell you.
Well, I appreciate that.
I really do. I you know, and I really do look forward to contacting you from time to time and other people in Saskatchewan and Regina in particular to talk about the Grey Cup festivities and what's going on. We want to know what's going on there, and I would really dearly love to know, you know, get a real idea and a real sense of what's going on in Regina. But what we're here today to figure out is with Belton Johnson, you know, a Mississippi lad who comes from Mississippi and he ends up in Canada, and he basically makes Canada his home. How hard is that as a transplanted Canadian? Is it to make? Is there anything you miss from back home that you know you can't replicate here in Regina or anywhere else in Canada?
Catfish.
Well, that's because you love the whiskers. You know, you're right. The catfish thing is a big deal in Mississippi, isn't it?
It is, even down in Louisiana, the gumbo and everything.
Oh,
but
chicken gumbo, my favorite.
Oh, I love it, man. I actually made my wife some once I had got back when I went down after the season this year. Got a couple things and, you know, brought it back and was able to make her some gumbo, and she loved it.
Well,
but, besides food, I mean, of course I miss my mom and, you know, my brother, my son. I have another son who's 13, and but he's, you know, I miss him a lot. And but he'll be able to come up here this summer, and just because I'm done with football, you know, at least he'll be able to spend a summer up here with me. Because, you know, in the past, like I said, he's my oldest. He's been around me since, you know, college football. And so he's used to the traveling and all that stuff. And, you know, for me to finally be done with playing football and, you know, the summers, you know, usually work out. And in the CFL, you know, that's when the games and training camp. So for him to come up here this summer is, I can't wait. But
you're gonna
got a good relationship. Go ahead.
You know, I was just to say that I'm just thinking to myself. I'm saying I'm gonna go see Daddy, and I'm gonna go see Daddy in a weird place, in this place called Canada. Should I bring my skis in the middle of the summer?
No, he's
you know what I'm saying?
Okay. But, no, he's been up here plenty of times. I don't think he likes the winters too much because he had a little snowmobile incident. But he'll definitely be able to come up, like, in the summer, and I think he'll like it a lot more here. Like, Saskatchewan is beautiful in the summer, but the winters, I can't stand it.
Hey, you know, Saskatchewan in the winter, it's plainland, so that wind has nothing to stop it.
It has nothing to stop it. You're right. It's like a, I mean, you can go outside. It feels like a knife is cutting you in the cold. Like, and that's the only reason it gets cold here is the wind. If it weren't for the wind, it'd be nice here all year round.
Yeah, well, that's the price you have to pay, my friend, to be in the wheatland of Saskatchewan. Hey, you know what, though? You get to be there for the Grey Cup. You get to be there as part of the team you played for. You get to be there for the preparation and the buildup of excitement, which I'm sure even this early, before the season even starts, the excitement of being in Regina when you and the rest of Regina knows they're coming to watch their team lose. You know, that's an exciting feeling. Your team has done enough. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit. We glazed over it a little bit. But really, honestly, as a CFL fan, forget my Argo love and desire for that team to do well. I'm telling you, if I was a Green Rider fan right now, I would be really happy. I mean, what they're doing on paper, like you stated, it's off the hook, as the young kids say today. It's off the hook what they're doing. It's amazing what they're doing. But you know what?
What's that?
What I was going to say, and unfortunately, and I apologize, we're getting a lot of gaps in between what we're saying, both of us. What I was going to say was they've done so much to create a winner. There's a winning atmosphere in Regina, and I really do wish your team the best. You've got a couple of teams in the West. Let's talk about, we've got just over 15 minutes left in the program. Why don't we talk about the season and the opposition that you're up against? Now, you're in the West Division, which as an Easterner and as an Eastern Division, you know, Argo team fan, you know, our division, you know, we had Edmonton in here. They made the crossover, which obviously states the fact that we were a little weaker this past year. After all, I mean, our Argo team that won the Grey Cup didn't win any more than they lost. So, needless to say, you know, the East is not the beast right now. Tell us about the West and what you see going on in the West and your competition out in the West. You're gone again, my friend. I'm going to give you a call. Na-dee-da-dee-da. Hey, let's take a short break while I make this call. Tie cats. Let's do a tie cat again. Here. Feed the tie cat.
When I smile and I'm off the field, people aren't afraid. But when I smile and I'm on the field, I think it puts some fear in their heart.
That was good. Let's do something else.
I'm just a regular Joe with a regular job. I'm your average white Leaside like snob. I like porno and proline and books about porn. I got an
average house. The local number you have dialed
must
be preceded by a
floors.
Area code.
My wife,
your call
my job,
will now proceed.
My kids and
for
my
future
car,
calls to this
my
number,
feet on
please
my
dial
table,
the area
and
code.
A Cuban cigar. But sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested. No way. Now I gotta wear double blue and hit the subway downtown. Yeah. I need football big on a really big field. No silicone cheerleaders. I want my chicks real. I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo. I fly to D.C. and hide all their weed. I go to Regina and say, how about that wheat? I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo.
Argo.
I park at Commonwealth and take Edmonton spaces while Edmonton people make Edmonton faces. I'm an Argo.
He's an Argo.
I'm an Argo.
I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get myself one of those Condridge Holloway mess jerseys circa 1982 with the midriff showing, just like those skanky Queen Street Lady Gaga wannabes, and walk right into Harbor 60, and there's nothing nobody can do about it. Yeah! And I'm gonna talk about the Argos on the radio anytime I want, because unlike that 60-year-old from The Fan who wears sunglasses on TV, I actually go to the games. Okay! They can take their 20 years of boring people with their Dungeons & Dragons staff and have a great big 20-year-old cakewalk right in the middle of Yonge Street, and it will make a lick of difference. You know why? Because we got the bombs. Yeah! We got Schultz, Dennegan, frickin' Naylor, and frickin' Randorf. I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna get Bill Simons, Joe Kroll, Terry Greer, and frickin' Don Moen, and a giant case of Crown Royal, and we're gonna go right down.
Hey, you know what, pal? You really are an Argo.
Just shut up and sing the song, pal.
I'm an Argo!
He's an Argo!
I'm an Argo!
I'm an Argo, and I'm proud of it.
Argos, without a Johnson.
That was Mike Richards of 1050 TSN Radio, and I recommend you listen to his show every day. And not only do you should you listen to TSN 1050 with Mike Richards on the radio, you should also record it so you can listen to it after it's done. It is the greatest radio show on radio right now. The only thing better than TSN Radio 1050 with Mike Richards is Frank and Belton.
I agree.
There you go. I'm glad we can agree on something. I lost you again, Belton. But fortunately, I have some stuff on file to help us kill the time between the time you disappear and the time you reappear.
That's what's up.
That's eight. That's aces. You know, I don't have the good fortune of being a black Southerner. I have the misfortune of being a Toronto Italian. So I apologize for my inability to be cool. But I try to be as cool as I can be.
Oh, you sound real cool to me.
Thank you. And taking it from you, I'm taking it as a compliment. You know, at the end of the day, we're all people, and we're all on this earth for one very important reason, and that is to get along and to have fun together. And I think that's the biggest thing that the CFL has to offer, is that CFL fans are different than most other fans. I mean, you went through the whole thing of high school football, college football, and then, you know, you had to make a decision or you had an opportunity, however it worked out. You ended up at the CFL. You have to be glad to have made it here and work for, if I can use that term, the CFL fans.
Oh yeah, I definitely loved it because, it's given me a lot, so... And it's also given me an opportunity to give back, you know, in the community in which I live. So I'm very grateful.
And Belton, believe me when I say this, we are grateful for your willingness to give back. And most of all, we are grateful for your part in our community. I mean, Canada is as you know, a melting pot. In the United States, it's a different story. But we like to think that we accept people's ideals that come to this country maybe a little more than maybe in the U.S. they would. Having said that, the important thing I'm trying to say is that we like people for who they are. And here you are, you come to a country as a stranger. And tell us, I mean, we've talked about you wanting to give back. But on a personal level, when you have a career in football, can I say something here, and I'm going to ask this honestly, right? Football has been a real opportunity for you to find out who Belton Johnson is, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us, express to us how it did that, how it does that.
I don't know. Just with football, I felt like it was like a father figure to me, too, because, single parent, my mom raised me and my brother both, and somehow we found the game of football, and... You know, with football, it's a disciplinarian. It teaches you life lessons, and I think, you know, all the way up to this point it's what made me too. You know, like it's football is responsible for that, and you know, again, you know, with football, it's taken. I never had a summer off since probably high school or something, like up until this point, and I turned 33 years old this year, so
get out.
I haven't had a summer off in like 20 years, so
you're 33 years old?
I'm an old man.
No, I was going to say that you're such a young man because I'm 20-plus years older than you. I'm old enough to be your freaking father, for God's sakes. Now I don't want to talk to you anymore. I've lost all interest in talking to you and understanding you and believing in you because now you're old enough to be my son. And let me tell you this, Belton, if you were my son, I'd be proud of you. I really would. You express the thoughts of basically most football players. I have people who don't understand why it's important to me to express the importance of a team game like football as a tool for children who may be, if I can use this term, wayward. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and football is a you've expressed it in such a nice way, and I really appreciate it. You know, the game of football here in Canada is not what it is in the United States. I'll be the first to admit that.
Oh, but no, it's not.
But what I will say is that football has its advantages. Football is a great game. It is a great builder of men. It is a great opportunity. It's a great equalizer, I think, more than anything. It's an equalizer. And that's why I support it. And sometimes I come across like I'm preaching, and I know it. And I understand the people who think I'm preaching. But really what I'm doing is I'm saying this to you who are listening out there, not to Belton, because Belton knows this already. Belton knows that the game of football has given him an opportunity that he would not have otherwise. Belton has explained here tonight that football is a game that a young man can be a part of to make him feel like a part of what's around him, as opposed to being not a part of what he's around. So, you know, if I'm going to preach, this is the end of my preaching. And all I'm going to say is I preach the fact that football is a team sport and it teaches young men to be members of a team. And when they learn to be a member of a team, they begin to appreciate it. So, Belton, that concludes my part of the preaching portion of this program.
Hey, I loved every bit of it.
I'm glad you did, because, my friend, I know where you're coming from, and I know where many like you are coming from, and I wish people would understand that sports and football in general are more than just a game. They're a way of life. And that way of life is important to many of the people who live it. And it's not just about making money. It's about making friends. It's about making who you are important to who you are. And I know it sounds like preaching, and I know it sounds like, I love the sport for that reason. I mean, I love many things in life, but football I love for the fact that especially for our American friends, it helps lift people out of whatever it is that they need to be lifted out of. I'm not here to define it. I'm not here to tell anybody what it is, but I'm just saying.
Oh, no.
Go ahead. You can pick up on where I left off.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean.
Tell us about it, because people need to understand that you're more than a football player. You're a human being. You're a human being with a heart, and you're a human being who wants to share his heart with others. And you know, as corny as this sounds and as political as this sounds, or now, you know what? I don't think it's political. I think it's about being a human being. And this is what I want to push on this program, is that you, Belton, are a human being, and I love your heart, and I respect your contribution to Regina and Saskatchewan, and the little bit that you'll contribute to the Grey Cup festivities. I really do appreciate you. I really do, my friend.
Thank you.
But, you know, do you think that people don't understand how wonderful a world the football game can be?
I'm not sure. You know, like I said, for me, it's done a ton for, you know, me and my family. You know, we're a football family, and you know, I know there's some people out there that don't have a clue about football, but, you know, again, for me and my family, it's opened a lot of doors.
Belton, be honest. Be honest. You're very fortunate. Belton, you're very fortunate that football exists, even though football is a cruel partner sometimes.
Oh, I'm very fortunate. I'm not going to lie to you, you know. Again, it's, you know, single parent, you know, it's football, you know, my mom, me and my brother both are over 300 pounds. And, you know, it was times when she would, you know, go grocery shopping and stuff. I know we drank like 2 gallons of milk a week. So, and with football, honestly, like, you know, I had got my scholarship to Ole Miss. My brother, you know, he got a scholarship to Ole Miss. And that's one thing our coach Cutcliffe had told our mom when my brother had got his. So, don't worry about feeding them boys no more. Ole Miss going to feed them, Miss Glenda. So, I'm telling you, football's done a ton for me and my family.
Belton, may I consider you a brother?
Yes, sir.
Well, I consider you a brother. And let me tell you, Belton, it really was a pleasure to talk to you. And it's always a pleasure for me to get to know a football player a little deeper than maybe he would be known in 15 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Belton. I really appreciated this time with you.
I appreciate the opportunity of being on your show, Frank.
Thank you, Belton. I really honestly appreciate it. And thank you for being on the program. Belton Johnson. Yes.
And you know the Ticat fans don't want to listen to this, so make sure you put it on Facebook and Twitter for me.
Hey, relax. They can listen to it all they want, my friend. Hey, the Hamilton fans, I have all the respect in the world for the Hamilton fans. Listen, thank you for tuning in to Candid Frank Live. Belton Johnson, earlier Paul Woods, historian. Belton Johnson, a great man, and just another person that's a football fan and a football player that has given back. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening. We'll see you again next time, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We might be disappearing for a little while. This will be one of the last shows we'll be doing. We hope you enjoyed it.
The following is a message from the 2012 Grey Cup champions, your Toronto Argonauts. If you didn't hear your voice, there's still time to be a part of next year's crowd. It's okay to pile on. Get your 2013 season tickets today. Call 416-341-ARGO or go to argonauts.ca.
Argo!
Thank you for joining us tonight for the Candid Frank Live Show, heard on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 10:30 to 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great night, everyone.